The first talk here will be dealing with research that involves regulated material, and the author is William Hare.
Good morning, and appreciate your being here. I'm glad to be here with regards to the land management and conservation community. As indicated, we're looking at general land management resources. Several agencies are involved when you start dealing with regulated materials. Those of you with the military group are probably familiar with this as well, as far as the regulated materials are concerned. And some of the talks this morning talked about invasive species and movement of invasive species and things of this nature. A lot of what we have to contend with when we deal with regulated materials is also pretty much the same way. Global field compliance policy, and this is with the contracting organization, whether it be Monsanto, Pioneer, who have you that you're dealing with, they have their own policies that you have to look at and follow. USDA is involved in this. Even before you can get a global field compliance policy from an organization, the USDA has to give them permits and things of this nature. EPA gets involved with regards to the various regulations with movement and that type of thing. And then the stewardship aspect of it. In other words, what do you do with these materials? How do you handle these materials? Where do they go? How do they work within your community and that type of thing? Field compliance checklist, there's about a 4 or 5 page checklist of things that we have to go through with regards to looking at the field compliance, where we're at with that. Crop-specific field release design protocol, and I'll look at that a little further, and regulated field compliance glossary. There's a ton of terms that I was unaware of before I started working with these regulated materials. U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service gets involved here because the material that you're dealing with, if it happens to get into the animal cycle, they're real concerned. They're also concerned about the wildlife. One of the earlier presentations talked about the poaching. Well, we're concerned about the deer poaching this regulated material rather than the hunter poaching the deer. The biotechnology regulating services program gets involved here within the USDA. Plant protection and quarantine, the PPQ people get involved here because that material is a regulated material. In other words, it's not to be released into any public entity. So we have to make sure that we maintain and quarantine that particular material. It's kind of like being quarantined in the hospital or whatever if you have some kind of illness. And the USDA import notification is involved here, as well as various USDA permits that you have to work with to use the regulated material. Environmental Protection Agency, experimental use permit comes from the Environmental Protection Agency. In other words, before you can start working with these regulated materials, and in my particular instance, it's plant materials, not animal materials or anything of this nature, we had to get an experimental use permit, plant incorporated protection PPIs with the PIPs, with the experimental use permit is involved there, and then the shipping and movement of regulated material. With this particular facet, there it is, they regulate how the material has to be packaged. In other words, the seed that we transport for the regulated plant material has to be at least double packaged. It can't be in a single container. It has to be in a container within a container. The internal container has to stipulate the USDA permit that it's being shipped under. The outside has to have the USDA permit, the EPA permits, and all this kind of stuff have to be on that packaging. The same way when we move it from the stored location to the location that we're either going to be planting or working with that material, it has to be, again, double contained and this type of thing. I was very fortunate in that both locations I had were listed in the experimental use permit, so I didn't have to go through the process of getting a movement permit every time I moved the seed from one location to the other. Field compliance checklist, and we mentioned this earlier, pre-plant activities, you have to go out and work with the agencies, get your pre-planting activities taken care of, reviewed and complied with the applicable supplemental conditions attached to the USDA approval permit. Contact the compliance specialist and make sure all of the information is correct. As you know, with my name, they had problems spelling my name, and until they got that correct, we couldn't do anything because it was incorrect information in that compliance package from the USDA. So anything that they have in there has to be correct, and if it isn't correct, then they can look at it and say, okay, we've got a problem with compliance. Verification that all seed received for planting is approved by the USDA notification. Within the USDA notification, they have the number of units or the number of pounds, number of kernels that you can receive with regards to this regulated material. And you have to verify and send in a verification report to the USDA that you received what they said you were going to receive. In other words, you can't receive more, you can receive less, but you cannot receive more than what the permit says you can receive. Seed stored securely. This is something that got me. You have to store it in a completely separate location from any other seed. You can't store it with your normal seed that you're going to be planting. It has to be in a locked, confined container that's not accessible to the public, this type of thing. So it's quite involved with taking care of and making sure that this material doesn't get into the public channels. How many of you remember the star seed corn or star seed stuff? Right. After that incident, they've gotten a lot stricter, I think, on movement of regulated material, seed, and that type of thing. Planning for appropriate isolations, and I have a map here that'll look at the isolation. Post-harvest volunteer monitoring. For our instance, we're dealing with corn. We have to monitor that for, I think if I remember correctly, it's 1 year for any volunteer. And if we do have volunteer, that volunteer has to be removed and destroyed on site. It can't be taken off site. So anything that you do has to be done on site. Planting activities, you mentioned the problem with movement of material on the tanks and the fire trucks and what have you. Planting activities, once we finish planting, the planter has to be completely evacuated and cleaned in the field. It cannot be removed from that isolation area prior to the cleaning. In other words, it has to be inspected before it can actually be moved. Same way with the harvesting equipment. It all has to be inspected that it doesn't have any of that particular plant material or seed in it before it can be removed from that isolation area. In-season activities, you have to go and verify that the material is still there, that the material isn't moving from that particular isolated area. And earlier in one of the talks, they talked about organic farming on the experiment fields. I think this would be very similar to trying to set up an organic farming plot with the isolation areas and this type of thing. Harvest activities, as I mentioned, the harvesting equipment has to be inspected before it can leave the isolated area. any harvested seed has to be destroyed right there in the harvested area. It has to be either ground and buried or something of this nature, such that, again, it can't get into the commerce chain. Post-harvest activities, again, the isolation area, the volunteer, this type of thing. You have to have a valid USDA APHIS. In other words, this is just an USDA certificate saying that you can conduct this particular research. Movement of regulated seed, as I've talked about earlier. Maintenance of regulated plant material at the destination. Again, we talked about that a little bit in terms of how you have to keep it within the regulated area. The seed has to be stored separately from any other seed. Isolation of regulated trial, and this again to me is very similar to the organic research. Prevention of any inadvertent mixing of materials. And with this, again, they have regulations as to how close you can have other plants and materials planted to it. Devitalization of the regulated plant material. Somehow you have to convince them that you have completely devitalized, in other words, the plant, the seed, and everything, any genetic possibilities of that moving into the commerce has to be devitalized. And monitoring of volunteer plants. Okay, this is, like I said, very similar to what I would perceive what you would have to do for your organic plots. Our regulated trial areas here, and these regulated trial areas are only allowed to be X number of acres. For our particular situation, the maximum number of acres that we could have in this regulated trial area was 5 acres. So we had to downsize the study considerable to get it to fit into the 5-acre limited area. And with that, then, we have to have this 15-foot unplanted alleyway around the field. And you start getting 15 feet of unplanted alleyway in central Kansas, you can imagine the problems you have with wind erosion and that type of stuff. So they would allow us to put it in grass or a non-harvested plant material, in other words, such that we wouldn't be harvesting that material with any type of harvesting equipment, which would eliminate any possibility of getting any of this regulated corn material into a bale of hay or a combine that harvested wheat or any other soybeans. You couldn't have any soybeans there in that 15-foot alleyway. The 660 feet is a required border area, if you will, or confinement area from any other corn, either regulated or non-regulated. So, again, if you look at this thing here, you take your regulated area, your 660 feet, and this direction, 60 feet this way, it takes a pretty good piece of property to put something like this on. And we alluded to that yesterday in some of the talks with regards to the organic material and that type of thing for that. When you get finished with this, they will have a compliance officer come and look and measure your regulated area. They will take and get a GPS reading in each of the four corners, put that in, see if you're above your limited number of acres. They will also come and check the 15-foot border area, and then they will also get GPS readings for the 660 feet from all directions to make sure that you're within their compliance regulations. So the first time I went through one of these inspections, I was a little bit concerned. But after we got through and sat down and started talking about it and going over what was there and what wasn't there, the individual was real, to me, cordial about some things that he could have been real sticky about. So in any case, that's the area there. They also require you to go through several training courses. In this particular situation, there was six units or training courses that I had to go through. This particular one was a core course, and this core course, you have to be there physically to go through the course. The other courses you could do on the computer via the internet, and this field compliance for the corn was one of those courses that you could go through on the internet. They send you these nice certificates via the email, and it took me a long time to figure out how to get that Adobe file into this PowerPoint file. So that was an interesting learning experience with regards to this particular presentation. This is a picture of a storm coming in from the west there at the experiment field in Hutchison. And with that, thank you, and if we have time for questions.
Your question?
Yes, John.
Does the company, I think, cover most of that as far as the protocols?
Yes, as far as the protocols are concerned, the company contacted us to find out if we were interested in doing this, and then once they got an affirmative from us, being the university per se, they sent a what they call a compliance packet or a three-ring folder that has stuff that you're supposed to go through and check off each time you do something, each time you move the seed, and what have you. In other words, they do have their specific protocols, whether it be, like, say, Monsanto or Pioneer or DeKalb. Any of those particular ones will have their individual protocol for doing this. But it, then again, it all falls under the USDA permits. So the USDA and EPA have the final say. And it will be USDA and EPA people that will come and do the field inspections. In other words, they're not employees of the company that is doing the research.
Were these essentially field performance trials?
They're not really field performance trials as such, because the regulated material is a material that they're still looking at for potential release to commerce. Yeah, but in terms...
It strikes me that 5 acres, by the time you take out all the borders and everything, is barely enough to get a good picture of yield.
Consider everything, and it's almost 40 acres.
Yeah, the 5 acres is actually
the actual plot area, the whole test. I mean,
in other words, the whole test here.
660 feet, that's almost 40
acres. Yeah, we're looking at close to 40 acres. The regulated area here, in other words, the area inside of the grade area here is 5 acres.
Right, that's what I meant. If that's the one that you're doing the trial on, it strikes me that that's barely enough to get a good picture of yield.
Yeah, with our planters and that kind of stuff, we were planting 35-foot plots, four-row 35-foot plots, with three replications under two different tillage systems, and in conjunction with that, I can't seem to keep track of the plant pointer. In this corner over here, we had a... seeding, we also had seeding rates in conjunction with that, and then we had a planting date study with three planting dates all pushed into that 5 acre block. This year it really didn't matter. Temperature is 112, 113 for a week. Our June, July, August precipitation was a little over an inch and a half. None of the material actually produced any valid yields.
You didn't get any seed back either.
Well, again, all the seed that we would have harvested there would have been ground right.
Right.
We didn't get anything back. Not even any forage, because we can't harvest it for forage either. So, but again, you know, the 5 acres there, based on the way we plant, our planter is set up with a cone on it such that we have no alleyways. It's just one plot right after the other. And we can really condense things into a small, confined area. I think we had a little over 150 plots in that 5-acre area.
Are you required to discuss the area and strengthen in the fall to take care of any drought?
Right. In other words, one of the things that is required is that area, whatever is there, be confined within that area. So their preferred method is to do some type of tillage to turn the stuff under. If we do no-till, we have to set up some kind of perimeter fencing around it after we're finished, such that none of that material can leave that area until such time that it's decomposed. So, yeah, there's quite a bit of containment process goes on there. We also rotate this. In other words, this is a long-term project, so we rotate it to a different piece of property each year, which means that we, again, have another 40-acre block tied up in this particular process. So this particular block will be tied up for about 2 years just in the initial planting and monitoring for volunteer and destruction of crop material. And then the next one will be another 2 years down the road, and the third year. So we're looking at the potential of, 12 years involved in getting the whole thing from start to finish.
Let's give him a hand.